Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I wonder when we hear, like, from some owners in town, do we want more of that or do we need less of it? Right? I think we need more Tom.
And everything we're doing is to win. It's more fun if you have a better record.
I think we probably could use more Danny Wirtz. I wouldn't mind that.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than winning a championship for Chicago, and those days erase every bit of tough ones. So it's a real privilege.
I don't know that we need more Jerry Reinsdorf.
Well, I think you want to be consistent, though, right?
I would like him to not send a letter out. I'd like him to answer questions.
Yeah.
Now go ahead and ask me whatever you want to ask me, and I'll answer whatever I feel like.
I don't know that he's at a point where he's either willing to do it or capable of saying anything.
Look, we're not going to be in an Ohtani race. I'll tell you that right now. I'll give you.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
We deserve it.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Wow, what a glorious weekend in the wide world of sports, Mr. David.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, it was great Saturday, college football, a lot of interesting games, a impactful one down in Champaign, Illinois. I think the highlight of the Brett Bielema era, beating Michigan.
Wow.
Sunday, you had the NFC North falling into place without the Bears playing. Boy, is that division tough. And big news out in Washington, D.C. with Jaden Daniels and the injury. But last night, and of course the Bulls and Blackhawks were in action, but last night we got our World Series finalized. We got the one marquee matchup everybody had been waiting for, and maybe not everyone.
Well,
but a lot of people in baseball.
Since 1981.
You said that this morning, and
that's a long time ago.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
It feels like people of a certain age remember the time when Yankees Dodgers was a staple in October, or it felt that way because they were so often in the postseason. You knew the Dodgers rotation. You knew the Yankees lineup, Reggie Jackson and versus Bob Welch and all those things. Tommy Lasorda always there. And now they're back with the stars of the game, the biggest ones, Juan Soto, Judge, Stanton, and Ohtani, and Mookie Betts. Great matchup.
Freddie Freeman.
He didn't play.
He's in it.
Yeah, he's in it. He's got till Friday to rest, yeah. Which is good. You want both teams at full strength if they can be.
Bunch of MVPs in the thing.
Bunch of MVPs, biggest names in the game. Juan Soto, we'll get to him, but goodness sakes, with the bat of the postseason.
Will Anthony Rizzo pitch to Freddie Freeman?
You remember that.
I do remember
that.
Oh,
boy. A lot of fun.
David, it's the most common championship in all of the major sports, and they haven't played it since 1981. That's crazy to me.
That may be the most remarkable stat
that
we will hear this week, and there'll be many of them because both teams have such proud traditions in history, but I did not realize that because it's been so long since they've been head-to-head in the World Series. What if I had told you in April or March or spring training, let's go spring training, that Michael Kopech is going to start the game the Dodgers would win to clinch the pennant? What would your reaction have been? And yet, Michael Kopech started the game the Dodgers won to win the pennant.
I would have thought, wow, what did the Sox get for him?
Exactly. Well, you know what? Vargas, right? Miguel Vargas would be the answer to that trivia question.
And two minor leaguers.
But along those lines.
And they lost two other players.
Well, along those lines, talking about that trade, who says the Sox can't impact October? Number one, Kopech starts yesterday. Number two, Tommy Edman, the guy that the Cardinals sent to the Dodgers in that three-team trade that Eric Fetty went to St. Louis. Tommy Edman had as good of a series as anybody in that Dodger lineup. He was unstoppable.
That was unbelievable. He was the MVP for that series, which is crazy.
Tommy Edman and Michael Kopech contributing to a Dodger pennant-winning team.
Yeah, who would
have
thought?
Thank you, Chris Getz. Getz, you get a ring?
So I saw a sporting event. I'm going to guess that you cannot name the sporting event that I saw.
Let me see.
Weekend.
Boston University lacrosse?
No, it wasn't a college sport. It was an international sport.
Oh, my gosh. You went to a soccer game.
No, I did not. I went to
rowing.
The head of the Charles Regatta. Take a bow, Mr. David.
So I figured when you're in Boston, which you did, welcome back.
Thank you, buddy.
That in October, there's a day way back in the day when I was covering college football where I went on a canoe ride on the Charles River when I was there for a weekend. It's beautiful. So you can relate. And
it was incredible. It was this a beautiful weekend.
The colors.
The whole weekend.
Colors.
They had, is that the song?
No, foliage. Colors. Tell me about the colors.
Oh, I didn't do any leaf picking.
Okay, leaf peeping.
Peeping?
Leaf peeping.
Picking?
Peeping? Peeping.
Picking? Leaf. I didn't pick up any leaves.
So you went to a regatta.
I went to the regatta. It's the head of the Charles Regatta. Mm-hmm. It is like this. It is it's sort of an international festival of rowing competitions. And there are all these Olympians there, it's this huge thing in Boston.
Oh, of course.
That they do. And I mean, there were like all these universities there. I watched the Texas women's team row down the Charles River for a little bit. It was pretty cool.
Cowboy hats?
No. They just had the burnt orange.
I wouldn't think that.
I know.
Texas would have a...
They got everything. They compete in every sport. So
rowing team.
Yeah, no, there were a lot of New England teams, but they were from all over the country and really all over the world. All these Olympians were there and they were interviewing all these people. It was pretty wild. You go down and you kind of stand there and you watch a bunch of people row and then you walk over the bridge and you stand there and you watch a bunch of people row.
Well, I had no idea. My guess is you had beautiful weather.
Beautiful.
Beautiful fall day.
Beautiful fall day.
So great day for a regatta.
Yeah, it was a good day for a regatta.
And good day, good weekend to be in Boston.
Great weekend in Boston.
You know, it just was a fun sports weekend overall.
That was pretty cool to just see a sport that was different, and I have no idea who won or how the competition worked out or what they were doing. It was 3 days of a bunch of people rowing on the
It was important
the
to them.
River. Oh, yeah.
You know, it meant something.
Really big deal.
Had some impact
and
in their lives.
Super cool looking.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
Really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was different. It was
good,
just
new
different.
Experiences.
Yeah.
Bears weren't playing. You looked away. You got away.
I got away.
That's good.
I went to parents' weekend, which I probably should have gone to last year, frankly. But it was great. And saw my daughter and had a great time. Really enjoyed just the wild stuff we did all weekend. Little weird stuff. Walked off campus at one point, about a 15-minute
walk.
Wild,
like college party wild? Or like unusually to be find myself in this experience wild?
Incredibly super cool and civilized wild.
Cool.
Walked 15 minutes from the campus to the house where JFK was born, which is run by the National Park Service, if you can believe that.
They give tours?
They did give a tour, went into the house. He lived there until he was 3 years old, and then they moved down the street, and then they lived there for 7 years.
They give tours to the house where he lived till he was three?
House where he was born. No, he didn't make an impact at all. The Kennedys bought the house back, and Rose Kennedy refurbished it to make it look like it did when he was born.
Cool.
And it was just a, you know, I had the Kennedy. What? How more Boston can you get? I had a regatta and the Kennedys.
Bump into
it
Theo?
Was really fun. Didn't see Theo. No.
That would be a big Boston experience. For a Chicagoan.
I was in his old neighborhood.
Yeah.
Could have run into him if he were still there. But no, I had a really nice time.
I imagine there was a lot of envy in Boston this weekend, baseball wise, watching the Yankees do what they're doing.
No one talked about it.
I'm sure.
So
you don't bring it up till it's over.
I did go. I saw a lecture on Larry Bird, as one does in Boston. It was more of an academic lecture.
Detour to Terre Haute. You're either in Terre Haute or Boston if you're going to a lecture about Larry Bird.
It was pretty cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it was good. And I mean, it was it was a fun weekend. Got to see my daughter. Got to spend some time. It was just a really nice all the way around. Had a little difficulty finding the Illinois game, but I did get to it.
Well,
so I got to see some of that.
You were treated to a complete performance if you were able to pull yourself away from, you know, the latest on the Boston Bruins, or maybe you got a little involved. Hockey talk.
There was hockey talk. I think it was Harvard played at BU.
Okay.
So there you go.
That's no Celebrini nostalgia.
He didn't come back.
No, you're missing him now. Mm. You know, Boston sight of 17 seconds. You know that. This means something in Blackhawk lore. But
of course,
we digress. The Illinois game was as complete a performance as you're going to see, or as we have seen,
yeah,
from a Brett Bielema coach Illini team. They were ready. They were tough. They were smart. And then they pulled the element of surprise. I loved the fake punt. I loved the fake punt they called. And they just did everything right. And Michigan is not the same Michigan, granted.
Yeah.
They are the defending national champions, but you beat them. And you did something that, you know, they hadn't done in 15 years in that program. So good for Brett Bielema.
Yeah, no question about it. It was fun to talk to him during the week. And then they pulled off the magic. So congratulations to them. And it's interesting because the Big Ten, among all the teams in college football seems really on its ear, if you get my drift. Everything's a little
bit
upside
down.
Explain
that. I want to know if you mean in a good or bad way.
Oh, I don't mean in a bad way.
It's awesome right now.
Yeah, it's just...
It's awesome.
I feel like anybody can win. I mean, you saw Texas lose, which was, you know, just super interesting. There's just been so much change in college football, really as much as anywhere in the Big Ten, which is now expanded.
Much bigger Ten.
Indiana remains undefeated.
Well, Indiana is a great example. More so than Illinois, I think Indiana is an example of today's college free agency. Mm-hmm. And where you go out and you get players and you plug them in and you play them here and you get a new coach who comes in. And he says, you know, what do you want to know? Oh, me? Google me. I win. That's what Frank Cignetti says to people who ask him that. That's one of his more quotable phrases or responses. That Indiana football team, I watched part of that game. They're good.
Yeah.
They beat Nebraska handily. That wasn't even close. It was a blowout. The problem now is as they get ready to host Washington and the College Game Day crew, that's relevance in college football. That's something else. Lee Corso, I think, is returning to where he was the coach once. Curtis Rourke, their quarterback, is injured. So you're not going to get a fair representation, maybe, of a team that's on the rise. But you're right. It reflects just how college football is up for grabs right now.
They also have Ohio State left on their schedule.
Yeah, they do.
I'm just saying that's going to be, you know, let's say you lose to Washington, then you're going to face a must-win against Ohio State, both teams.
You're right.
In order to make the college playoff.
Tough. But you know what? At a program like this with a coach this new, you can win 10 games and not be disappointed in the least.
And I wasn't implying that you would be. I'm just saying they are unbeaten.
They're unbeaten. They're like 13th in the country. Notre Dame is 12.
I know.
Illinois is 20th, and it feels like that's a little low based on how complete their victory was. And you know that they can use that as fuel. I agree with you, though, in terms of the overall state of college football. You watch Georgia and you watch them handle Texas without much problem.
No.
I mean, they made both quarterbacks look pedestrian, really.
They really did.
And then you start to wonder exactly when we're ranking these teams to really know how good or bad the top of the heap is.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting year. And it, in many ways, kind of lacks clarity yet. But it should set up for a fantastic finish, here's hoping.
Notre Dame plays Navy this week.
Mm-hmm. How about that? The two toughest teams on their schedule are Navy, coming up next, and Army. I mean, who would have picked
Navy
that?
And Army unbeaten, both undefeated, and Navy is not going to be any kind of pushover. And the way they play and how disciplined they are, they're fun to watch, and they're going to give Notre Dame all it can handle. That game's in the Meadowlands.
A friend of mine texted me and says, hey, I'm going to need tickets to Army-Navy. And I was like, what, you want me to talk to the generals and the admirals? I know. Like,
You know people. You might – listen, you have connections to the government that not all of us have.
Okay, that's funny.
Yeah, I mean,
thank you.
I think that's probably the genesis of the request.
I'm under a lot more investigation.
Yes, you are.
Most of us.
I mean, you have ways. All you have to do is hit that secret button over there on your computer and be like, tickets? Tickets, bro?
That's so ridiculous. Yeah, no tickets. No connections.
So –
Don't know any of the generals. I'm smarter than the generals. But let's not get into that.
No, let's not get into that. No. Oh, boy. So, speaking of golf.
There you go.
Okay. The NFL had an eventful Sunday, as it always is, and we had a lot to digest from a Chicago standpoint.
Bears took a step back by taking a week off.
Yeah, that thud you heard was the Bears falling into last place.
How do you become worse when you don't play?
You didn't become worse.
Everyone got better,
You didn't become worse.
Almost everyone.
You didn't. Well, almost everyone. The Vikings did what you expect the Vikings to gradually do.
Yes.
Right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they were in that game up to the end.
Oh, they were in that game.
That was a heck of a...
That was
a Jared Goff kind of cavalcade. That was him announcing himself a little bit as one of the better quarterbacks in the division.
That was Jared Goff announcing himself an MVP candidate.
Yes.
That was Jared Goff reminding people how good he can be. And yeah, he can carry a team. He did yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was also the Vikings, I think, thriving in the moment, playing off their home crowd, doing what they needed to do to get out to a 10-0 lead, trying to hold on for dear life and being unable to. That's a good team. It's a great division right now.
Yes.
But I do feel like the Vikings losing that first one, I don't know if that's a domino or not, but it could be the first.
I was watching one of the pregame shows, and they were rating the division, and all three of the raters had the Bears in last place before the games were played.
Mm-hmm.
And JB says, well, hey, Kevin Warren has already put a call in. He doesn't like the way we're talking about the Bears.
Oh, come on.
I think he was joking.
Why the Kevin Warren reference? Kind of a random team president reference in a football conversation.
So then he must have called. Very strange.
Well, he knows everybody.
It was a strange thing to be watching.
He knows everybody, and he hears everything.
They had that. They had them as the last place team before they emerged as the last place team.
Objectively, yep. Did that surprise you?
Not at all. No.
And I think we have talked about
it
all along.
I don't think
it
surprised anyone.
No. I don't think so. It's one of those things where you just understand that two things can be true. The Bears are maybe the last place team in that division, mm-hmm. which is the best in football, and they have made progress this year, and the arrow is pointing up.
The Bears are 4-2, and everyone else in the division has won 5 games. How does that happen? That's crazy.
So there's some fuzzy math going on here. We're going to have to figure out this out because we're going to get the question a lot, and I don't think it's mathematically possible. Mm-hmm. Can all 4 teams get to the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No, I don't believe so.
So Jared Goff.
The South will get 2 teams in.
You know, you mentioned the Jared Goff statement on Sunday.
Yes.
My favorite stat from all of them on Sunday regarding the NFC North is how good Jared Goff has become. Bad news in Chicago and certainly in the division. The last 2 times a quarterback has had 3 straight games of a passer rating of 140 or higher. Aaron Rodgers, 2011, and Kurt Warner during his MVP year. Both those guys won Super Bowls that year. Both of them were most valuable player.
Mm.
And that tells you the kind of role that Jared Goff is on right now. He is doing everything right, throwing off his back foot, throwing off whatever foot.
Yeah.
He's just so accurate, and he doesn't seem rattled.
No, he doesn't. He's had a successful career up to this point, did make it to a Super Bowl, but wasn't considered. There was a question of whether they just, in the Stafford deal, they just took him. And now he's like the leader of that team.
He's the leader of that team.
He's totally.
And you'd rather have him than Matthew Stafford. I know the age is a thing, but right now you'd rather have Jared Goff than Matthew Stafford. That wasn't true during the Super Bowl year for the Rams, but everything evens out. You know, the Lions did not come out sharp. They looked like a team that was rattled in that environment. And Dan Campbell tries his own fake punt, didn't work. That didn't look like a team that was ready to play. And then they gradually resembled what the Lions have resembled lately.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but he actually managed the clock very well.
At the end of both halves.
Think about it.
I know.
I'm talking about Dan Campbell.
We can't have that.
No.
You can congratulate him for his charisma and motivational. He's the guy that is all emotion, not all intellect.
Yes. No, he did very well.
If he starts getting smart, that's a problem.
Yeah. No. You felt like that, and I know that they technically the Vikings had the ball at the end of the game, but you felt whoever had the ball last was going to win that game, and it almost held up because the Hail Mary, there was no time left.
Well, he bled the clock. They worked the clock, and then they kick it and win it.
Yeah, it was pretty
good. And good day for kickers in the NFC North.
Yeah.
Brandon McManus, they pick up the Packers win on a walk-off field goal. Guy they signed on Wednesday. Welcome to Green Bay, kid.
Pretty good.
They needed to make a change at kicker. And then poor C.J. Stroud got the little brother treatment on his way off the field. Poor guy.
I love that. I love that. Jordan. Did Jordan Love call him over and tell him, hey,
bro. Hey, come here. Come here. Next time, you might want to complete 50% of your passes. not C.J. Stroud's best day.
Yeah.
Look, come here.
It was fun, and there's good teams. There's good teams in the NFC North, and the Bears are up against it. They're going to have to continue to play well. They got some interesting news. Is it good news, bad news? The Washington Commanders, Jaden Daniels suffered a rib injury and had to leave the game. Did not play the second half, but it's uncertain what his status will be. He has not been ruled out for this next game, the Bears' next game.
You sense it's going to be one of those things that lingers all week and becomes a game-time decision. Mm. We'll talk about it a lot. And, you know, obviously from a television standpoint, the game was flexed.
You flexed the game.
You like the matchup between the rookie quarterbacks, 1 versus 2, when you compare and contrast their styles and seasons. But Marcus Mariota is one of the better backup quarterbacks in the NFL.
They did not change their offense, and he looked like he knew it pretty well.
Speaking of high draft picks,
he looked like a very quarterback-friendly offense.
He's become a journeyman. He's been with the Raiders, the Falcons. Now he's with the Commanders, came in with the Titans.
The guy you were so quick to dismiss.
Who did I dismiss?
Cliff Kingsbury.
How did I quickly dismiss him?
I'm just blaming you for it.
You're blaming me for that?
How didn't you hire him, Mr. Davis? Well,
I love the architectural plans that he was for that lakefront property he was going to develop.
He would look beautiful.
I mean,
this time of year, sitting in his lake home,
he would look majestic. If you want somebody to be part of a lakefront property, wouldn't you want him developing it?
He'd throw a better Gatsby party than Flusy. Let's just be honest.
Can you imagine what his place would look like on Lake Bluff? The scenes. The white parties that he would throw. They're
all dressed in white.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Head to toe. Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah. Well, they did well.
You see, he's a good coach.
They were playing no one. It was just mean. I'm sorry. The Bears already beat that team.
They were playing nobody. Andy Dalton did his share. And how bad must Bryce Young be that he can't get back on the field now?
Yeah.
No. Your season is lost. Don't you want to see what you have? And if you already know, that's a problem.
That is a problem. But they do already know. They blew that pick.
Then last night, how about last night? The Steelers.
Yes.
Looking alive.
Well.
Took a little while.
It took a little bit, yeah.
Russ was rusty. And I think you understand that his last game was on Christmas Eve, they said, or right around Christmas last year. Then it took him a couple quarters to get going.
Who's more rusty, though, would you say? I mean, I got to tell you, like Aaron Rodgers, whoa.
Yeah.
You gave him everything he wanted.
They picked the right opponent to make Russell Wilson look young.
Here is our receiver. Wait till you see this.
Oh, my.
Gulp.
Gulp is right.
If Hassan Reddick can't save their season.
He's not going to save their season.
He reports on Monday.
That's the most ridiculous holdout in NFL history.
If he can't save their season, then their season is lost.
Their season's lost. They're 2-5.
And they lost 3 straight games.
Go nowhere. But did you see the way that Davante Adams looked to Aaron Rodgers? And boy, their eyes met. And
it was so wild. he was wide open. And
maybe one of these days he'll be able to throw over the defensive line again.
He was so bad.
He looked old. He looked washed.
He looked washed.
Yeah.
He did look. He looked every bit of like the oldest guy on the field.
As the game grew, he looked older. Russell Wilson looked more comfortable.
Yeah.
And Russell Wilson getting into the groove. And
Justin Fields didn't look comfortable.
No, he did not. They did not.
They didn't use him in any way.
They didn't use him in any way. And they kept showing him on the sidelines. Like, yeah. Leave him alone.
No.
He handled himself like a pro. Leave him alone.
They got to get him on the field because –
In the red zone, they struggled. I wondered if they would do that. I don't think
need that pick. He's got a lot of ground to make up.
I don't think that Mike Tomlin wanted to invite that kind of controversy. They had enough of it.
Yeah.
So Steelers win big.
Yeah.
Big win.
Big win against a really bad team. 37-15.
Jets stink.
Jets are absolute garbage.
Jets and Giants both stink.
Yeah, how about that? That's kind of fun.
It is kind of fun.
I like the Saquon Barkley.
Mets
game.
Get eliminated. The Liberty win the WNBA title. Big, big news. Boy, if you're a sports writer in New York City, yikes.
Yeah.
Yesterday was a huge day.
Well, not really a good day unless you consider the women's basketball championship good.
It's not bad.
I didn't say it was bad. Yeah. It kind of got buried on a football Sunday.
Yankees?
Anybody notice?
Yeah, it did. It got buried.
It did.
I don't know why in the world they did that.
Come on. All right. That's... add it up to the many complaints, and we'll formally present them. We've got the pick six, and we've got to get to that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are the Bears the worst team in the NFC North? Was the takeaway of every NFC North team improving to 5 wins mean the Bears at 4-2 are somehow in the dungeon? Can you make a case that the Bears are better than the Lions, the Vikings, or the Packers?
Not yet. I think that that will be forthcoming. I don't know that we will ever be making a case that they are better, but I do believe that we don't know yet. At this point, yeah, they're the team that that has 4 wins and everyone else has 5. They are a winning team, but how do you rate their victories in terms of the quality of the opponent, all that stuff? They somehow are indeed in the dungeon because everyone else has a win more than them. But that doesn't mean that they're a bad team, and it doesn't mean they can't beat some of their division opponents. They haven't played them yet. So I think that the hope is that the Bears are building, and the hope is that they are improving while they're doing so. And I think there's a lot to like about what the Bears have done, but no, they have not made the kind of strides as the other teams in their division has done yet. So the good news is that there are 17 games, and you will have a conclusion and knowledge of this by the end of the season. And mercifully, they get to play each of these teams twice. So when you talk about division games, you have sort of the basic idea that your familiarity with them helps you to be able to hopefully win your home games and then maybe steal some on the road. We'll see if that holds up. But at this point, they're 4th, and that's what the records say. But I think that we will have it all unfold in front of us, and I'm not kind of living my life to get ahead of myself. I want to watch it all unfold.
Well, it's going to be exciting, that's for sure. And 4-2 is not terrible. You'll take 4-2 after 6. If they go 4-2 every 6 games, they're going to be in pretty good shape, right? As this season plays out. Now, I know the defense is good. That I think we all know. I believe this defense can hold these offenses to about 24 points a game. Can the offense score 27 points a game against those teams? You know, can the Bears' offensive line hold up against these defenses? Can they run the ball against these teams? These are the questions that I'm worried about. I think the defense can do their part. Can the Bears play complementary football? Seems to be like the crazy word everybody likes to talk about. You know, can the Bears offense complement the very good Bears defense?
Good questions. They're the right ones. It's fun to look ahead and consider where they are in the best division in football. I don't know if anybody's going to hold the Lions at 24 points. I mean, that offense is just too good, and Ben Johnson is really too smart. Jared Goff is having an MVP-like season, and I don't care if he is doing it indoors, as a couple texters have pointed out. Wait till he gets outside. He's good. He's on one of those kind of roles, confidence-wise and otherwise. And they have, you know, look at their running backs. The Lions offense is the best unit in the NFC North. The Bears defense should take that as a slight and try to be the better than that. That's the point of comparison that you want to have. What is the best unit in the NFC North? Probably right now it's the Lions offense. The Bears defense can challenge themselves to be that group by the end of the season, and it is fun to consider. But you're the Bears, and you have not earned the right yet to look ahead. Frankly, you haven't earned the right to be compared to the other three teams in your division ahead of you. You are on a path. You're headed in the right direction. The arrow is pointing up. Nothing has changed at Hallis Hall because of what happened in the NFC North on Sunday. What's happening at Hallis Hall is they're getting things together and they're making progress, and they are doing so by focusing on themselves, and that's got to be the focus moving forward. Who cares right now if this is what they should be saying inside Hallis Hall? It's great for us to talk about. It's a tremendous conversation in Chicago. But at Hallis Hall, who cares what the Packers, the Lions, or the Vikings did on Sunday? You're 4-2. You have not had a playoff victory in so long. You are not a winning team since Matt Eberflus arrived. So you need to take care of business. The Washington Commanders are next, and that is all that you need to be focused on right now.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. 7 o'clock this morning is Biggs time. Did the Bears catch a break with the Commanders losing their rookie quarterback, Jaden Daniels, to a rib injury Sunday, given the way Marcus Mariota played in his place? Do you wonder if the Bears hired the right OC? Is that one of the many questions to be resolved next week in Washington?
Well, it's a fun matchup on a lot of different levels. You've got Caleb Williams going home to his hometown where he attended high school and grew up, and that's fun. You've got Matt Eberflus versus Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn was a finalist. Matt Eberflus got the job, and Dan Quinn's doing a pretty nice job in Washington as second go-around as a head coach, and they are playing well on both sides of the ball. You've got Cliff Kingsbury versus Shane Waldron. Right now it's an easy thing and conclusion to reach. Boy, Cliff Kingsbury's doing great because he has got Jaden Daniels playing at a high level before the injury, and look at Marcus Mariota picking up and not losing a step offensively. A lot of great matchups, a lot of fun things. I don't know that it's an advantage necessarily that this Jaden Daniels injury occurred. Certainly he is playing at a high level and was before the injury, but there's not that big of a step down to Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota is a veteran who, again, for a couple games in a row, he can be and resemble the player he was when he was drafted so high out of Oregon, when he was the Titans franchise quarterback. That seemed like a long time ago, but there are glimpses, and you saw it on Sunday, where he will show you why he is still valued in the National Football League. So, yeah, I want to see Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams, but I wouldn't exhale if I'm a Bears fan because Marcus Mariota is going to be the starting quarterback. He can still hurt you. And if they doubt that, just wait.
Can the game be flexed back on like Thursday if Jaden Daniels is ruled out and it becomes a noon kick and all of a sudden Tony Romo and Jim Nance are doing another contest? It would be disappointing after all this hype. And obviously we're part of that hype. But I mean, the question is going to always be there in my mind. Like, why wasn't Cliff Kingsbury hired? You know, was it because the head coach didn't want his replacement in the building? Was Cliff Kingsbury not interested in working with Caleb Williams? Was Caleb Williams not interested in working with Cliff Kingsbury? Which part of that, how did this not come together? It looked like such a natural fit, and that's going to be a storyline. Did the Bears catch a break? If listen, Marcus Mariota is not as good as Jaden Daniels. And unfortunately, if the Bears beat Marcus Mariota and the Commanders, there'll be people out there saying, well, we still don't know how good the Bears are because they didn't go against Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I think that it sets up for a great game either way. I don't think you need Jaden Daniels to make this a good game. I think that it's going to be a good game no matter what. It's the Montez Sweat revenge game. So we want to see
There's
that.
Another one.
There's another story. There's another connection. For you. Yeah. So I think that there's a lot to like about the game. I won't be brokenhearted. Dan Quinn said after the game that there'll be more tests today. I believe Jaden Daniels' mom came out and said he's fine. Everything's okay. The x-rays were fine.
Dr. Mom
said he's okay. Put a Band-Aid on it. But no, I mean, we'll find out if he's able to play. I suspect he'll be able to play and that he'll have a flak jacket on or something. And, you know, again, it's good stuff. I think, generally speaking, and I know this has changed a little bit, you get a field goal for being at home. And I believe that the Washington Commanders are favored by 1 point. And it's a home game for them. So that's interesting. That means if the game was in Chicago, the Bears are favored by one? Oh, okay. Bears favored by one. So that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I mean, the Bears are a winning team, and the quarterback issue is at least there's nothing. All should be healthy. We'll get injury updates later in the week for the Chicago Bears, and we'll find out. There's still some questions about some guys. If Jaquan Brisker's able to play, how the secondary is going to look. It's important to have all your players in place, given the issues that you had with some of those injuries going into last your game before the London game before the bye. So yeah, I'm all for it. I think it's kind of fun. It's going to be good regardless of who can play a quarterback as long as Caleb Williams is there.
Coming out hot with the hot question, but
after another double-figure performance, has Lonzo Ball put himself in a position to be counted on as a rotation piece as the season begins on Wednesday? Where is your confidence in Ball?
I believe that he is a rotation piece every other game, or as long as they're not back-to-back, or within the minutes limitations, within the 16 minutes that he will be limited to in the games that he plays. So I think the plan is to go into the season and to have him as a rotation piece, but obviously a limited part of the rotation. I think it's going to be very interesting to see if that is determined to be impactful in terms of something that would interrupt your kind of rotation, right? I mean, if you want your second unit in there for longer, is that gonna change the flow of what you do if you can only play him 4 or 5 minutes at a time? So I think it's just because of the injury, because of the return from it, I think it's something that we're going to have to monitor as they go on with their season. But at this point, I do think he's part of the rotation.
Oh, definitely part of the rotation for sure. I guess the question is he like the first? Like, is he your first option off the bench? I mean, they've got so many guards on this team that they're everybody's like 6'5", 6'6", and they're all guards. It's crazy. But the other thing from the other night, would they shoot 50? They 50, 53 3-point attempts. Right, the Bulls. He can make a 3-point shot. Mm-hmm. The Bulls have been desperate for a 3-point shooter, and I think that's another part of this that he can do that, and they need that desperately. So I'm excited about this.
I'm stunned by this because this whole preseason has been an eye-opening experience in watching the Bulls and seeing how far Lonzo Ball has come. I will continue to be amazed by what we're seeing here and what he's come back from. You don't want to ever take that for granted. But if they are going to be in a position to count on him and he's part of this rotation, it does change the way you view this Bulls team maybe this season. They shot more threes in the preseason. I know it's only the preseason, but the only other team that shot more threes than the Bulls on average, the Boston Celtics. They have transformed the way they play, and they've done it because they trust a smaller lineup. DeMar DeRozan is gone. They're not celebrating that as much as they're embracing the opportunity to change their style of play. Patrick Williams, Zach LaVine, Kobe White, Vooch. You look at their starting players, and they all have the ability to hit from three-point land. Josh Giddey being probably the shakiest shooter. You bring in Lonzo Ball, he's a 40% three-point shooter. Io can hit the three. Julian Phillips has shown a propensity to hit the three. This is a three-point shooting team. You got to make them if you take them, but the Bulls are changing the way they play. It's kind of exciting. Very curious to see where this goes, and a ton of respect for Lonzo Ball and the way that he's changed the narrative.
You know how that's a great question.
That was the voice of Coach Bielema. Illinois beat Michigan to move up to number 20 in the AP poll. Award for the biggest W in Brett Bielema's tenure is a real reality check awaiting the number 20 Illini against now number one Oregon. Does it matter? How high is the ceiling for Illinois, and what other games stood out from this weekend?
First of all, I am Mr. I hate throwback uniforms guy. Always, traditionally, I hate, you know, the novelty uniforms thing. I loved Illinois' uniforms on Saturday.
They were cool.
I have to say, the Red Grange throwback stuff, it was just amazing what they look like, the leather helmets. And you know what? I think they played that way. They played like a throwback, good old-fashioned Big Ten football team. They ran it down their throats. They played tough defense. They hit you into next week. This is a Brett Bielema team. This is what happens when a coach stays at a program long enough to make his presence felt and to put his impression on it. Illinois is dangerous. I don't know that they can beat Oregon. I mean, come on. Oregon is high-powered. It's a tough challenge. It's on the road. All the things that are excuses or reasons why they may fall short. But they still can accomplish something very significant this season in terms of this being a turnaround defining season. The Big Ten is very interesting this year. Illinois, Indiana beating Nebraska stood out. Notre Dame taking care of business against Georgia Tech stood out because they needed to do that to hold serve, so to speak. There was a lot of fun stuff with the Georgia and Texas game, but Illinois made the deepest impression on me. I watched most of that game, and it was a statement.
Yeah, CBS really embraced all of that nostalgia, right? They were dressed, the broadcasters dressed up, and the making of those helmets, that was pretty cool. If you didn't catch that video, that's something to spend a couple minutes on. They did look a lot better on the players than they looked in the promotion of the uniforms. I agree with you, David. They look good. I thought it was great that they beat Michigan. The other game that stood out has to be Georgia and Texas, and kind of called for it. Like, oh, get the Manning, you know, get Manning in that game if things aren't going well. Well, he got in and got his bell rung and fumbled the ball. You know, Georgia's defense looks. See, Georgia's offense, not so great. They can run the ball, of course. Quarterback, totally overrated. Doesn't do anything for me. I can't imagine him leading a team back if they were down by like 10 or more. But the defense is really good and really disappointing. The fans of Texas throwing all the beer bottles and water bottles down in the field, and then they reverse the call. That was just absolutely a wild game. But how about the Big Ten? You can't figure it out. I mean, USC went overtime with Penn State. Penn State wins. Northwestern beat Maryland, like thumped Maryland, and then Maryland beats USC. I mean, it's just there's a stat out there about if you go two time zones, if any of these teams move, like I think one team, and I think it might be Penn State, has won traveling two time zones. So it doesn't look good for Illinois. They're gonna have to travel two time zones.
They're like a 21 plus point dog.
Wow.
This is the first time in 17 years they've played the number one team in the country. I believe that one was in Columbus, and the Vegas people apparently feel the same outcome is coming. I mean, 21.5 point dog? That means, and I guess the over-under on the game is like 54 points, which means Vegas thinks they're going to lose like 37 to 16 or something. That's crazy to me.
It's a blowout.
That's a blowout. So they're supposed to go the multiple time zones to Eugene and then get spanked for their efforts. That's kind of
get
the
idea. Get a Nike gift bag on the way out.
Yeah, maybe they can go to they'd have to go to, where is the?
Beaverton, Oregon.
Is it in Beaverton? I think it was. I thought there was an outlet store in Portland.
There might be.
I don't know. But my goodness gracious, that is madness. I think Illinois has been great, and I hope that they can pull it off. I listen, Oregon's excellent. There's no way around it, and it's a tough place to go to play a game. But really, I mean, you're just coming off you got one loss on the season, and that's at Penn State. You played them close in a game that you weren't supposed to be in, and now you're going to go get blown out in Oregon. I think they can cover. I don't know if they can win, but I'd like them to cover in that game.
Wow, that's a good question.
That's the voice of John Heyman. He'll join us at 9 out in L.A. with Juan Soto essentially having one of the clutch at-bats of the postseason and hitting a home run that helped out the Yankees getting to the World Series first time in 15 years. How surprised are you that SpotRax estimate that Soto now will command 12 years, $500 million plus free agency deal? Knowing that, Cubs, are they in or are they out?
Well, unfortunately, it looks like they're out. They haven't really been mentioned as in. 12 years, $500 million. I guess if you're going to give anybody a 12-year deal, you want to, I guess he'll be 26 by the time you sign him, but you are going to pay top dollar for the prime years of this particular player. And I got a feeling you're going to get some really excellent prime years from this particular player. He'll get the money. He'll probably get the money in New York, and I would imagine he'd get the money with the Yankees after that at bat and the home run that he hit to end that at bat. That was I watched that pitch by pitch breakdown on the MLB Network, and it was unbelievable. He was just waiting. He was going to wait that guy out until he threw him a fastball. And that's exactly what he did. And he just kept fouling off everything thrown until he got the fastball and he just drilled the thing. And it was one of those things where because there was backspin on the ball, it looked like the outfielder thought he was going to catch it. It was a no-shotter. I mean, the guy had no hope. That thing was long gone, 3-run home run in the 10th inning. Just an incredible, a booming homer from Juan Soto. And when I say he's going to get paid in New York, if the Yankees don't pay him, the Mets will. Seems like that's the kind of thing that would be the kind of big move that you could see the Mets owner make. He seems to like to make some attention-grabbing moves. I just don't think he's going to wind up in Chicago.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, every Cub fan knows they need a star on that team, but 12 years, $500 million, it's ridiculous. It almost makes me, like, ill, honestly, like, to fathom it. But if the Yankees win the World Series, I mean, He's staying in New York. Now, you're right, Mully. The Mets owner might go like over the top by $100 million just because he has it maybe. And he can do it.
Or maybe the Dodgers do if they beat him. If they beat them. If he beats them. Who knows? Juan Soto, if they win this World Series, will have two World Series championships by the time he's 25 years old. And he will be a big reason for both of those seasons.
Yeah.
So the money, by Major League Baseball standards, as absurd as it is, will be considered money well spent. Smart investment. I don't expect the Cubs to get in the mix here. I don't think that anybody outside New York will. It would be awesome to consider, and it is difficult to comprehend, but Shohei Ohtani signed for $700 million based on the fact that he's a pitcher as well. We don't know if he'll pitch again, likely will, but that jacked up his price. You're paying basically for a two-for-one. Juan Soto alone as a hitter and a fielder likely will easily clear the $500 million threshold because he's 25. And he will seek a you know, double-digit years in terms of a commitment. So not crazy to consider. That was one of the best at-bats you're ever going to see in the postseason. He got the best of Hunter Gaddis, who tried and tried and tried, yes. But you just got the sense that it wasn't going to happen. Juan Soto goes deep. He's going to get rich. He's already a rich man, but you wonder if he can stay healthy. You hope that he can, and somebody's going to pay him that money. Somebody in New York. It likely will be the Yankees.
Terrific question. Need to get that answer. Don't have it for you today.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine. And over the weekend, our guy Bruce reported that the Astros will shop Josh Hader. He's got 4 years and $76 million due to him. Bruce also said the Cubs will show interest if it's at $19 million a year, with potentially Astros chipping in salary as well. How much should that option be for a team that blew 26 saves?
Well, if you're the Cubs, you have to have these conversations with closers if they become available. Nobody wants to pay a closer that kind of money, because it violates some of the tenets that the Cubs try to follow. That said, what this says to me is if Bruce is hearing this and he's reporting this possibility, the Cubs are committed, or at least in theory, they're going to approach this offseason somewhat differently. And they've got to. You can't cling to the conservative approach. You can't be that team if you want to get back to the postseason, where you have to get a star, you have to get all-star players at certain key positions. They don't have an all-star closer. I don't know if I trust them to develop one. So I found this very interesting. Yeah, I would take a gamble on Josh Hader if the Astros are going to pay half his salary. That would be a worthwhile commitment and investment, because they would bring him to the manager who knows how to use him.
Well, just like I said for the last question, everybody knows the Cubs need a star, and everybody knows the Cubs need a closer. I don't think the closer is on this team right now. Now, I don't know if Josh Hader's the guy. Has he been figured out? And again, how much does the manager like Hader? What is their relationship like? Because obviously he's going to have a big say if that was to come to be.
Well, I mean, the question is this guy kind of falling right into the sweet spot for them, right? They got the manager, you know, whether he wants him or not, he knows him. They got a team that could certainly use him. I think his familiarity with Wrigley comes into play. Isn't he? He was something like 20-0 in one-run games in Wrigley, or I mean, some ridiculous statistic out there. I mean, you gotta get help in the bullpen. If this guy is available and they're eating half the money, why wouldn't you want him? Because he no longer can go multiple innings? I mean, I think you take him on and you use him the way the manager wants to use him, and you hope that their relationship is strong, and you laugh all the way to the bank because you're getting a commodity that you might have been willing to pay for at a significantly reduced price. And you need him.
You paid Hector Neris $9 million to light fires.
Yeah, that. And what did he do?
He lit fires.
Yeah, he did not do much.
Hector, heart attack, Neris.
Yeah.
See ya.
I'm with you. Well, he's long gone. I'd take the guy on, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I would too.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me, Dustino. I don't care what anyone else thinks, for God's sake. All right, we've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What are your thoughts on Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs remaining undefeated with a 28-18 victory over the 49ers in a rematch of last year's Super Bowl? What can you say about Mahomes? Now 11-3 as an outright underdog, 12-1-1 ATS in such games. The Niners were favored in this game by 1.5.
Brock Purdy was largely irrelevant. They had some injuries. The 49ers and Kyle Shanahan cannot solve the Chiefs. This is Kyle Shanahan's new big challenge. He has to do a lot of things in his career, I'm sure. Beating the Chiefs is the biggest. Can't do it. Look at the numbers against that team. So what the Chiefs are doing is remarkable. Ho-hum, we're 6-0. They aren't playing as well as they could offensively. First few weeks of the season, you're wondering where Travis Kelce is, besides the Taylor Swift concert, but you're wondering where he is in terms of production. Patrick Mahomes has more interceptions than touchdowns, 8-6. That's remarkable. And the new star in Kansas City is Steve Spagnuolo. I don't know if he's that new, not to anybody who's been paying attention, because that's how they won their last Super Bowl. Defense still wins championships. And the defense in Kansas City is thriving because of Spags. And you look at what they're able to do. They plug and play Kareem Hunt. They lose receivers. Doesn't matter. Mahomes gets it done with his legs. Great run. That guy is just a tremendous competitor. Even after that little awkward interview with Tom Brady on the Fox pregame show. That was interesting. We'll talk about that later. Anyway, the Chiefs are more impressive to me because they are winning without their offense clicking. And they are the team to beat. And that's been the true since, you know, the last three seasons.
Yeah, the game didn't exactly deliver the hype. And as you mentioned, David, injury is a big part of that. Christian McCaffrey hasn't played all year for the 49ers. So it's hard to really pick at them, but they can't beat the Chiefs. I mean, at the end of the day, the two teams are scheduled to play and they play and whoever's available goes out there. It's amazing that Mahomes is, you can never bet against him. You just can't. And the numbers are laid out there. 12-1-1 against the spread when he's a underdog. I mean, come on. And you know, no touchdowns.
Yeah.
They just
have two picks.
Yeah. And they just figure out how to win no matter what. And the run that he had yesterday, he like stopped the 49ers defender, kind of was going, his momentum kind of carried him out of bounds.
Slips out of banana
and peel. Then he just kept going again. I mean, he's a magician.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like that 33-yard run down the sidelines because they felt that he was faking, like he was running out of bounds, and then he just got going again. And, you know, it's basically you are encouraging players to hit quarterbacks if you do stuff like that, because rather than run out of bounds like he should have done, he then took advantage of the guy not hitting him and ended up with the longest run of his career. Believe it or not, that's the longest run of his career. And, you know, I don't know that I agree with that. It was like that Kenny Pickett run in college where he pretended
tackle
to slide
him.
And then he ran. I know you say that, but if you were to, no one wants to be the guy that ends Patrick Mahomes' career. Or no one wants to. He also joked that he's got a dad bod now and that's how he had that 1 yard run where he cut in and ran over the safety.
Like
lowered his shoulder and knocked the guy down.
The girth.
And kind of looked at him, and that's what he said. He's like, I'm a lot bigger than you think I am. It was pretty funny.
I love that.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
It was.
But the whole thing, I mean, listen, he's in the center of it. He's the guy that makes them go. He's the guy that's won Super Bowls already. There are other players around him, but he is the biggest difference maker in the NFL. He is the one guy in the league that is the ultimate multiplier. He just makes his team better, and he can win in overtime, and he can win when the game is on the line, and he won that game without throwing a touchdown.
Regardless of having more picks than touchdowns this year, he still is the ultimate multiplier.
And his team's unbeaten, and he wins another game. And you'd stand back and you look at that record. They were a 1.5-point underdog. You see him as an underdog, I think you got to pound him.
Yeah.
I think you got to wager on
him. I also love it because he was one of several Chiefs members that went to the Friday night football game for Matt Nagy's son.
Matt Nagy's son is a quarterback, and they all showed up.
It was cool.
It was him and a lot of the – I think Andy Reid was there.
Andy Reid was there. Yeah.
They had a lot of pro athletes that showed up, and the kid's going to Kansas, I guess, next year. Did you see that?
I did see that.
Yeah. So that's good. Way to go, Matt Nagy.
I'm glad they bounced back after having to leave that cool house.
Yeah. That house with all his plays on it.
And the gym and all that stuff.
Yeah. It's tough. But that's life in the NFL. That's what it's like.
I wonder who lives there now.
I wonder if they kept that up.
I wonder if they did.
It's like when you buy eventually the Eberflus house with that E. Are you going to keep that?
No.
Depends on who buys
it. It's gaudy, man.
if it's the Everlast family, I'm going to, I guess they keep it.
The Edwards.
The Edwards might keep it. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I have a great setup.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Glorious day, David, the 21st of October.
Yes, it is. Good Monday morning.
We're right around the corner from Thanksgiving. I think Halloween comes first.
Yeah, Halloween comes first.
I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Right. Big day.
But I'm dressing as a pilgrim.
Okay. That'd be good.
That way I'm covered.
Will you wear it to work?
No.
Be more people watching you what we're wearing
these
days.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. So today at 7 o'clock in a few minutes, we are going to, according to the press releases that have been out there this morning, the Mully and Haw Show will be joining and being simulcast on the Chicago Sports Network.
What?
From 7 to 9 every morning. Oh. They're going to do our 2 hours, 7 to 9, and we're joining the team. And it's going to be something that is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a partnership with the new network. Jason Coyle, the president of CHSN, will join us at 8:45 to talk about that and the issues that they're dealing with trying to get a better carriage deal. We know that people are struggling with this, Hawks fans, Bulls fans, and we're going to address it. We'll talk about that. But this is something new for us. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And it won't change anything about our content. It won't change anything about anything. But we're just going to have to, wave to the camera maybe every now and then. I don't know.
We're going to try.
Probably not.
To not be self-conscious. I think that's the key. I don't want to fret. Yeah. What?
No, it'll be fun. It's a good step in the right direction.
No doubt.
More eyeballs, more people. Always enjoy that. And it's a good, I can tell you from working over there, we do the Big Pro Football Show and then the Chicago Lead. It's a great group of people to work with. We're joining and partnering with a great organization, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Sounds great. We're going to get to a break, and we'll come back, and you'll see us on TV if you can, or you can listen to us on TV.
Both.
We'll be doing the radio show. It's Mully and Haw on the screen.